5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Crime with Holly. It's your girl Holly, and I am back today with another solved murder case for you guys. If you are new to the podcast, I just want to say hello and welcome. I am so glad that you found me, and I hope that you enjoy my content. And don't forget to hit subscribe on your preferred podcast platform. Today, I only have a brief case update for everyone. This is an update on the Jared Breitigan case. As always, I will link that episode in the description of this one. So if you haven't listened to it yet, you can get all caught up. But the current update is that the man Henry Tenen, who was the one that confessed to shooting and murdering Jared, has now said that his confession was false. Just as a brief reminder, Henry confessed to killing Jared and agreed to testify against Jared's ex-wife Shanna Gardner and her husband Mario Fernandez. Things are happening back and forth at this time with court proceedings, so when more information comes out, I will keep you guys posted. One other thing that I wanted to bring up was earlier this week, Shanna Gardner's discipline reports from jail while she's awaiting her murder trial have been released, and they include drugs, other contraband that she had in her cell. She also had some theft violations and a few other things, which this does not look very good for Shanna. Other than those two things, I do not think I have any other announcements that I want to make. I did, however, learn, though, that you guys are able to leave comments on podcast episodes over on Spotify. I had no idea that was a thing. I've been podcasting for almost 5 years now, but apparently you can comment, and I am also able to comment back to you. I thought that was pretty neat. So if you guys are on Spotify and you listen, leave a comment. Tell me your thoughts on cases that I cover, and I will comment back when I see those. Today's case, I really want to hear your guys' thoughts and opinions on. There is a lot of back and forth finger pointing in this case, and I am very curious if you guys think someone extra is involved in this young woman's murder. So without further ado, let's get into the details of the murder of Denita Smith. Denita Monique Smith was born on November 20th, 1981 in Charlotte, North Carolina, to her parents Sharon Elaine Cook and Calvin Lee Smith. Denita was described as being sweet, caring, loving, and friendly. She had a passion for photography that started at a young age, and she was a devoted member of her church. Denita never met a stranger, and she did her best to make people feel seen and heard. She was the type of friend that you could always count on, and overall was just described as being an incredible person. The thing I noticed most about Denita was how beautiful she was. She had this big, beautiful smile. But Denita wasn't just beauty. She also had the brains. Danita graduated in the year 2000 from West Charlotte High School and then went on to obtain her bachelor's in English from North Carolina Central University in Durham, North Carolina. And she did that while working as a photographer and a writer for the campus newspaper. Danita had a real gift with her photography. Like I said, she started at a young age with a camera, and she really enjoyed the art of photography. Her mom said that it was Danita's way of expressing herself, and she had an incredible eye for just the right shot. So she excelled at her position at the campus newspaper. Now, Danita lived in an off-campus apartment complex called the Campus Crossing Apartments in Durham. And Durham is a pretty big city in North Carolina. According to the things I found online, it's North Carolina's fourth most populated city and is actually known as being a part of the Research Triangle region, which they call it that because of all the technology companies as well as scholarly institutions, like all of the universities that are in that area. They have a lot to offer young people, like events, restaurants, attractions, and so much more. It looks like a nice and desirable city to live in. Danita, I don't really think, took advantage of all that Durham had to offer because she was so busy focusing on her dreams and ambitions. She was always working on something. After obtaining her bachelor's degree, she knew that she wasn't done with school, and she enrolled in a master's program at the same school, and she continued her work in journalism for the school paper. Danita also was accepted into the New York Times Student Journalism Institute internship program in 2004, which is a huge accomplishment and just goes to show that Danita was destined for greatness. And I can only imagine the amazing things that she would have done with her life had it not been stripped away by an evil person. As if Danita was not busy enough with everything I've mentioned, she also worked to earn money as a tutor and worked 12 hours a week holding private one-on-one tutor sessions with people. Danita was set to graduate from her master's program in the spring of 2007, and in January 2007, she was already hard at work on her master's thesis. Now, for Danita, everything she did, she wanted it to have meaning. And for her thesis, she was looking at race and gender and how they impact each other. She also had written articles for the campus newspaper about racial discrimination and housing. And she just really cared deeply and wanted to make an impact with her writing and work she was doing. With her graduation on the horizon, Danita once more knew that she wasn't done, and she had plans to get her PhD in English and mass communications. Her best friend Edith Kearns said that Danita always had goals and things that she was working towards, and what she set her mind to, she was going to accomplish. On top of everything she had going on, Danita was also newly engaged and working on her wedding plans with her fiancé, Jameer Stroud. Jameer and Danita had been dating for several years and met during Danita's freshman year of college. She always spoke so highly of him to her friends and said that he was a gentleman. He's intelligent, he was active, involved, well-rounded, kind, respects her, protects her, and was loving towards her, according to an Oxygen article. Danita's mom, Sharon, even loved Jameer. He was polite and respectful to her, and he always promised to take care of her daughter. He seemed like the perfect man, and though Danita knew he was the one, they took things slow and didn't rush anything. After Jameer graduated from college, he moved about an hour away from Durham to Greensboro to become a police officer at the Greensboro Police Department. So at the time of Danita's death, the two were living some distance apart. And though an hour isn't far away from each other, it's far enough that they weren't seeing each other every day and every night. And I'm guessing with how busy Danita was and Jameer's job, they probably only saw each other on the weekends. But for them, it worked and they were in love, planning a wedding and looking forward to the future. Unfortunately for Danita, that future would never come. On January 4th, 2007, Danita was at her apartment that was located not far from the college campus. It was still technically Christmas break for the students, so the apartment complex that was usually overflowing with people was eerily quiet because most students hadn't returned back to the area from their trips home for the holidays. But Danita was back and getting a jump start on her studies for the upcoming term. At around 8:30 in the morning, a man that lived at the complex was out and about. I'm assuming he was leaving his apartment when something caught his eye. Now, these apartments were multi-story, and at first, he noticed that some items had been dropped on the stairs. He spotted a purse, a pair of shoes, a water bottle, all of which were just lying on the stairs, kind of scattered and strewn about. Which he thought that was kind of odd that it was so many items that had been dropped, so he started to go down the stairs a bit, and that is when he spotted a woman lying on the ground at the bottom of the staircase, with a massive amount of blood coming from her head. He used his cell phone to call 911 and told dispatchers that he believed that a woman had fallen down the stairs and she had blood coming from her head. He told them that she wasn't moving and wasn't responding to anything he said to her. He was able to grab her purse and find her wallet that had her identification card in it, and he told the dispatcher that the woman's name was Danita Monique Smith. He started calling Danita by name, but again, he got no response. Police and EMS were dispatched to the scene, and the university was quickly notified of an emergency with their student. And Danita's mother, Sharon, was also notified that something had happened. Sharon was told that it appeared that Danita had lost her balance and fallen down the stairs, and she was unconscious, but they were trying to revive her. Now, Sharon was still living in Charlotte and immediately jumped in her car and started to head towards Durham, which was a 2.5 to 3 hours drive for her. While driving, she called Jameer and told him what had happened and told him that he needed to get to Durham. He would be able to get there faster than Sharon, and so she told him he needed to get there ASAP. Jameer notified his work supervisors of the emergency and jumped in his car and also headed for Durham, not knowing what to expect. Word spread quickly that something was going down at the Campus Crossing apartments, and when Edith, Danita's best friend, heard, she started calling Danita to see if she was okay. When Danita didn't answer or immediately call her back, her first instinct was to call Jameer and see if he had talked to Danita. Edith said in an interview that Jameer really didn't give a solid answer and just told her to stay calm and that they will get to Danita. I'm going to guess he was probably a little overwhelmed and worried and flustered and just trying to focus on getting to Durham. Meanwhile, back at the scene, there was a heavy police presence and they taped everything off and wasn't allowing anyone to come or go. It was apparent that when they arrived that it was too late for Danita and she had already passed away at just 25 years old. At first, they weren't really sure as to what happened. She obviously had a lot of blood coming from her head, but at first glance, they couldn't tell what happened. Until the medical examiner arrived on scene and discovered that Danita had been shot in the back of the head from a very close distance. Her purse had been left behind along with her wallet that held cash, so they quickly ruled out robbery as a motive. So as the investigators started to try to piece together what happened, people were showing up at the complex and hearing the news that Danita was dead. When Edith got there, she was shocked to find some of her college professors there, and it was them who gave her the horrific news that her best friend was dead. Not long after she got there, Jameer arrived, and Edith had to give him the news that his fiancée was gone. Edith said that Jameer was very calm and didn't show much emotion. He seemed like he was in shock. He just kept telling her that everything was going to be okay. Next, Sharon arrived and police had to give her the devastating news that her oldest daughter had been murdered. Sharon, Edith, and Jameer just stood around embracing each other, crying, not able really to do much else. While they were mourning the loss of Danita, the investigators had a lot of work to do, starting with talking with Danita's fiancé, Jameer, which we know is typical protocol for the police to turn their sights on the significant other. They asked where he had been before arriving to the apartments, and Jameer told the officers that he had been at home in his apartment asleep because he had just gotten off the night shift at work as a cop in Greensboro. They asked him a few more questions and then left him be. Obviously, with an alibi saying he was home alone, they can't completely rule him out. But they would later uncover that his cell phone did indeed ping at his apartment where he had said he was at the time of Danita's murder. So they moved on and continued to look further into what happened. Thankfully, it didn't take long before they got their first break in the case. Just 2 hours into investigating Danita's murder, the authorities learned that a 911 call was made at 8 a.m. before Danita was found.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
On the morning of January 4th, 25-year-old Danita Smith was shot in the back of the head while leaving her apartment. Danita was well-loved by everyone who knew her and didn't seem to have any enemies, so who could want her dead? That was the question the authorities were asking themselves when they learned about a 911 call that had been made prior to Danita's body being found. This caller was a maintenance worker for the apartments where she lived, and he said that around 8 a.m. he heard a gunshot. When he looked towards where the sound came from, he spotted a woman running from the back of the apartment building 1100 to the front of the complex. This building just so happened to be where Danita lived. Seeing this woman struck him as odd because it was a very unusual route that someone wouldn't normally take, and that's what initially caught his eye about her. She ran over to a burgundy-colored Ford Explorer and got inside the driver's seat. He drove over to her car, and when he pulled up, he could see that she was covering her face with her hands and she appeared to be crying. He asked her if she was all right, and when she looked up at him, it was clear she was distraught and very shaken up. She told him that she didn't like guns, and she heard the gunshot and was scared. He told her that he was going to call the police, and that is when she got even more upset and drove out of the apartment complex. Now, he told the dispatcher he heard the shots. He saw a woman who also heard the shots, but she was scared. But later, when the authorities learned about this call and they asked the man for a description, he told them that she was a black female who was about 5'10" and that she had been wearing a ponytail in her hair. But he also remembered a very key detail about her. The long sleeve shirt that she had on had some sort of emblem or patch on the upper sleeve. It's unclear if police had responded to that 911 call, but either way, it was at least a half hour later that Danita would be found at the bottom of those stairs. So when police got the description of the car and the woman, they actually called Jameer, who was already on his way back to Greensboro to mourn the loss of his fiancée. And they asked him if he knew of a woman who drove a burgundy SUV, and he replied, "Holy crap, I'm turning around and coming back." Jameer was very familiar with a woman in a burgundy SUV, and he gave them the name of Shannon Crawley. Shannon Crawley was a single mom to two children, and she worked at the Greensboro Police Department as well. While Jeremy worked as a police officer, Shannon worked as a 911 dispatcher. And let me just mention right here that 911 dispatchers also wear uniforms with emblems or patches on the sleeves. According to Jameer, he first met Shannon in 2000 at work and was instantly attracted to her good looks. But at this point, he was in a serious relationship with Danita. And his relationship with Shannon was strictly friendly. They work together. Dispatchers and police officers are always in communication, so they had a friendly relationship. But by 2004, that relationship at some point turned sexual in nature. Again, he was still very much dating Danita long distance, but Shannon was closer in Greensboro. From my understanding, Shannon was also aware of Danita. She knew that Jameer had a girlfriend, she had seen pictures of Danita inside Jameer's apartment, and yet she still continued to sleep with him despite him having another woman. Now, at some point, Shannon became pregnant with Jameer's baby, and she ended up getting an abortion. And this is when things between Jameer and Shannon kind of ended. They would still see each other in passing, say hello when they would, but anything romantic ceased at this point. And that was about a year before Danita's murder. Shannon and Jameer did remain friendly with each other, and Jameer did end up apologizing for any wrongdoing to Shannon that he may have done. Jameer would eventually tell police that he went on a church retreat, and one of the messages taught at this retreat was to apologize for wrongdoings and make things right with people. After the retreat, he called Shannon and apologized, and the two spent 12 hours on the phone together, having a very long and in-depth conversation about things. And while to Jameer, that might have just been him trying to make things right, to Shannon, I think she thought she still had a chance with him. Jameer also tells police that it was after this church retreat and apology that he gave to Shannon, Shannon started to almost stalk Jameer. She bought a house just down the road from him. She would turn up at random places that he would be. And he even confided in a friend at work that Shannon was stalking him and non-stop calling him. Then, on Christmas Eve, 2 weeks before Danita's murder, Jameer and Danita walked into his church in Greensboro, where he introduced her to friends and she showed off her brand new shiny engagement ring. And lo and behold, Shannon was attending that church for the first time that day. So not only is she showing up places randomly, buying a house down the street, calling nonstop, she was now inserting herself into his church. All of this could be chalked up to being a coincidence, of course, and who truly knows, but Jameer was extremely uncomfortable by it all. So while the investigators were interviewing Jameer, he was very cooperative. He answered all the questions, he was upfront and honest about his affair with Shannon, but they were still suspicious and thought that maybe he was their guy. I did mention earlier that he had said that he had been home alone, but with zero evidence to back that claim at that time, how could they be sure? And even when they did get the cell phone data to prove his phone never left his apartment, that really didn't mean anything because he could have left it behind. And as a cop, he likely would have known that you can track cell phone data. They couldn't rule him out, but they also couldn't say that for sure he pulled the trigger that ended Danita's life. When they did the autopsy on Danita, they recovered the bullet and they found that it was likely a .38 caliber round, but they didn't find much else. There was no traces of someone else's DNA left behind, and so the authorities were left to just do some good old-fashioned police interviews. With Jameer having been interviewed, their next stop was in Greensboro to find Shannon Crawley and question her. They went to Shannon's work, where they learned from her supervisor and fellow co-workers that Shannon was an amazing worker. She was reliable, she conducted herself in a thorough and professional manner. They had zero complaints about her as a whole. Investigators took Shannon into a private room and asked her about Jameer, and she told them the exact same story that Jameer told. She said that she knew about Danita, but still got into a relationship with Jameer. She told them about how they met, when the sexual relationship started, about the pregnancy and abortion, and she also had the same date for their breakup and the reasons for that as well. The detective asked her when the last time she went to Durham, and she had said that she had never been there before. He asked if she had a gun, and Shannon told him no, she's never had a gun, she doesn't like guns, and that she's scared of them. They asked Shannon about where she was at the time of Danita's murder, and she said that she had taken her child to the doctor, which her supervisor also confirmed that they had been notified by Shannon that she needed to take her child to see the doctor. And lastly, they asked her if she thought if Jameer was capable of murder, and she replied, quote, no, not at all. So while the investigators are wrapping up their questioning, Shannon's supervisor popped his head in and handed the lead investigator, Sean Pate, a note. In this note, it just stated that a coworker wanted to speak with the investigators before they left. This coworker wanted to make sure that it was known that Shannon had been receiving some disturbing personal phone calls while at work for months. And those calls were coming from Jameer Stroud. The worker said that Shannon had told him that she didn't know what to do because Jameer had been showing up at her home and she felt in fear of her life. Shannon also told him that Jameer always carried a gun with him and she was scared. Obviously, this coworker is worried about Shannon and wanted to help her the best that he could. So he tells Shannon that he has some extra guns at home and he would be willing to sell her one and teach her how to use it, just in case she ever needed to defend herself. He tells the investigators that Shannon agreed and he sold her a .38 caliber revolver with bullets and then took her out to teach her how to use it. Now, this piqued their interest even more. It wasn't but just 5 minutes ago they were interviewing Shannon, and she had said she had never owned a gun because she was scared of them. Yet this man is claiming he sold her a gun that is of the same caliber that they believe the bullet was that was used to kill Danita. And not to mention, she was telling this coworker that she feared Jameer and feared for her life around him. But when asked if she thought he was capable of murder, she was certain that he was not. The math isn't math in here, and things obviously are not adding up. The following day, Detective Sean Pate went to question Jameer once more, and they asked him about whether he had been harassing Shannon. He, of course, denied ever bothering her, and when asked if he thought Shannon was capable of taking someone's life, he told them yes, he did believe she was. So back at the Campus Crossing apartments in Durham, police showed the maintenance man that witnessed a woman in a burgundy SUV a picture of Shannon Crawley. He could not positively identify that Shannon was the woman he saw. But when shown a picture of her SUV, he was able to say with certainty that that was the car he saw. He also was able to give a pretty detailed description of the patch that was on the sleeve of the woman's shirt. The further police dug into Shannon's alibi, the more it was looking like she had been involved in the murder. On the morning of Danita's murder, Shannon had clocked into work sometime after 10 a.m., giving her plenty of time to murder Danita at 8 a.m. and drive back to Greensboro. And remember, I mentioned that Shannon said that she had never been to Durham. Well, cell phone records would prove that that was a lie. And she hadn't just been there on the day of the murder, but Shannon Crawley had been in Durham the day before as well, with her cell phone location placing her exactly at Danita's apartment, leaving the investigators to believe that Shannon had gone there as recon and to get the lay of the land. With all of this information, the police obtained a search warrant for Shannon's home and searched it top to bottom. Now, they didn't find a gun or anything like that, but they did find uniforms for the 911 call center that had the same patch on the sleeve that the witness had described. They also brought in Shannon's car for testing, and they found on the steering wheel and gear shifter that there was gunshot residue left behind. If this wasn't damning enough, when the detectives checked Shannon's alibi of taking her child to the doctor, they just had to call the doctor's office to find out that that was a lie too. Shannon's child never went to the doctor's that day, like she told her supervisor, as well as the detectives. So they had all of this damning information, but what could have been Shannon's motive for wanting Danita dead? The only logical thing that they could come up with is that Shannon wanted Jermier badly enough that she would kill for him. And they believe the idea of killing Danita was planted when Shannon got an abortion. Both Jermier and Shannon told Detective Pate that when Shannon came to Jermier telling him that she was pregnant, he said, quote, "I don't want to have a baby with you," end quote. And that is why she chose to get an abortion. And I think it was in that moment that Jermier thought to himself, holy crap, what am I doing? I am in love with this other woman. I want to marry her. This is wrong and I need to end it. And that is exactly what he did. He ended the relationship with Shannon and she was naturally hurt. She likely realized in that moment that she was truly nothing to Jermier. And so this seed of hatred for Danita was planted, and nearly a year later, to the date, she was dead. I do think with Jermier still being friendly and talking to Shannon and having that open communication and giving her that big apology about what had happened, she believed that she still had a chance with Jermier as long as Danita was out of the picture. 5 days after the murder of Danita, Shannon Crawley was escorted out of her sister's home in Greensboro in handcuffs. She was cool as a cucumber about the arrest and almost appeared like she was expecting this moment to happen. She was escorted to the waiting police cruiser at the end of the driveway, and she turns around to her sister, who is standing dumbfounded in the doorway, and yells, quote, "Raise them as if they're your own," end quote. When they arrived at the police station, Shannon continued her calm demeanor, and she turns to Detective Pate and says to him, quote, "I didn't do this. You need to worry about where Jermier was." Now, Shannon's family has been her biggest supporter through all of this, and they fully believe she's innocent and had nothing to do with Danita's murder. And they have backed up the claims that Jermier was calling Shannon nonstop. They posted her bail, and in May 2007, while awaiting trial, Shannon and her attorney walked into the Durham Police Department and had a new story to tell.
I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Shannon said that on the night of January 3rd, Jameer showed up to her home and told her that she was going to keep quiet. He threatened her with a weapon and made promises to harm her children if she didn't cooperate. She said that Jameer forced her to drive to Danita's apartment and then drive back to Greensboro. The following morning on January 4th, Shannon said Jameer forced her to drive to Danita's apartment again. But this time when they got there, Jameer got out of the car while she waited inside of it. She said that while sitting there, she heard a fight break out and she got out of the car to see what was going on. She said she approached the building and that was when she heard a single gunshot. Jameer ran back to the car, jumped into the driver's seat, leaving that gunshot residue behind before he crawled over the seats into the back. Shannon said that when she got into the front seat, it was then that she encountered the maintenance man. She claims that the man didn't see Jameer because by this time he was already in the back hiding. She said that she drove off and she kept asking Jameer what had happened, what was wrong, and he continued to yell at her to shut up. Detective Pate asked Shannon why it took this long for her to tell them what had happened, and she said that she was scared for her children's lives. She said that Jameer had made threats to her children and he knew how to get to them, and so she kept silent out of fear for their safety. She also did admit that she had purchased that gun, but 2 days later, Shannon claimed that she threw the gun away in a dumpster because it had made her so uncomfortable having it in the home. Now, let's look at this as a whole. Jameer said she's stalking him. She's saying that he was stalking her. There's a lot of finger pointing and he said, she said. And Shannon's story is somewhat plausible. Maybe it was indeed Jameer who pulled the trigger, jumping into the front seat, leaving the residue behind before climbing in the back. Maybe Shannon really was in fear for her life and her children's lives. Her story was fitting the evidence as far as her driving to Durham the day before and again the day of the murder. And as we know, Jameer's phone never left his apartment in Greensboro. His alibi cannot be 100% checked out. Perhaps he did leave his phone behind when he was going to go commit murder. There was just really no concrete proof one way or the other. And the district attorney wasn't ready to drop those charges against Shannon just because she was singing a new song that could possibly fit what had happened. He wanted proof of her story, and so the DA told Shannon and her attorney that in order to drop these charges, she needed to find a way to prove that her new story was true. Now, of course, Jameer was adamant that he was not involved and that Shannon was full of lie after lie. And I'm curious to hear what you guys think. Do you think they had enough evidence on Shannon to convict her of the first-degree murder of Danita Smith? Or do you think Jameer was involved? While out on bail, Shannon said that Jameer was still stalking and harassing her. So she asked the investigators if she could set up her own sting operation to prove that she was innocent. They gave her full permission to do what she had to do. Shannon recorded around 30 minutes of conversation with a man that she claims was Jameer. In the conversation, Shannon is telling him he just needs to admit what had happened and to tell the truth, and that she shouldn't have to go down for something she didn't do. The man that she claims to be Jameer replied that it's better her than him, and he will get away with this murder. Shannon's family, like I mentioned earlier, have been huge supporters of her. Her parents and brother all stand behind the fact that she's innocent and even claim to have heard those threatening phone calls as he was making them to Shannon while she was out on bond, and how scared Shannon was through it all. Shannon's mom even said she had the other phone listening in on calls that Jameer would make. So they hand these tapes over to the DA in hopes that it would prove her innocence. Though investigators weren't present when these calls were made, they were able to track the payphone that was used to make them. But unfortunately, there was no way to prove who had used the phone to make the call. When the DA listened to these tapes, he said there was absolutely no way that the man on the other end was Jameer. It didn't sound like Jameer at all, and he was not buying the story. During all of this, when the DA was building his case and Shannon was out on bond, she moved in with family in Charlotte and claims that the harassment and stalking continued. On a night in July 2007, Shannon had taken her dog out for a walk at 2 a.m., and that is when she claims that she was sexually assaulted and raped by Jameer. She claimed that Jameer had a knife that he had used to cut her clothes off and that he had then inserted the knife into her vagina, assaulting her that way as well. When the rape kit came back, they found no traces of semen was present. And after further testing of her clothing, they found no DNA evidence linking Jameer to touching her at all. Of course, they did a physical exam of Shannon, and they also found no evidence of an assault, other than she had some superficial cuts on her legs, on her chest, as well as on her labias. But there was no trauma or damage inside of her actual vaginal canal to prove that an assault had happened, let alone a knife being inserted into her, which that would for sure cause some serious damage. Shannon swore that it was Jameer that assaulted her and told the police to go check in his garbage can for a knife because that was likely where he threw it. The police also contacted Jameer and he denied being in Charlotte and said that he had been working when this alleged assault had taken place. When Jameer went to go outside to throw something into his trash can, that's when he spotted a knife lying at the bottom of his otherwise empty garbage can. Of course, he called it in, and when neighbors were questioned, they told police that they had witnessed a car pull up outside of Jameer's home. They heard a thump or something being tossed into the garbage before they saw an individual in a dark hood speed off in a car. Further testing of this knife showed that there was no DNA evidence of it belonging to Jameer at all. There was no fingerprints on it either. And the cell phone records also placed Jameer in Greensboro at the time of this alleged assault because he was making and receiving phone calls. On February 8, 2010, Shannon Crawley's court proceedings began, and the DA painted the picture of Shannon being a jealous ex-lover who drove to Danita's apartment the night before she was murdered to figure out just how she was going to ambush an unknowing Danita. The following day, Shannon was there waiting for Danita to leave her apartment, sneaking up behind her as she approached the steps and shooting her in the back of the head. The defense told the same story as the one Shannon told when she got out on bail, that it was Jameer that forced her to drive to Danita's apartment and again the following day, and that it was Jameer who pulled the trigger that ultimately took Danita's life, before fleeing to the car and making more threats to Shannon. Because the state had no physical evidence at the scene of the crime placing Shannon there, they focused on trying to prove how much of a liar she was, and to prove that her story is just, once more, another lie, and that she was willing to continue to try and lie her way out of what truly happened. The prosecution put many people on the stand, including Jameer. The prosecution also presented those tape-recorded phone calls Shannon claimed were Jameer talking about the murder. They presented those to further prove how much of a liar she is, because the person on the phone had a high-pitched voice, almost like Michael Jackson, while Jameer had a deeper, rougher voice that the jury themselves got to hear in person. Shannon also took the stand in her own defense, and when she told her story, she was very calm and cool in her demeanor, and she seemed almost believable. When the jury was released to deliberate, the DA was very nervous and on edge about what they would come back with. He did his best to present the evidence and to prove that Shannon was not credible, but you truly never know what can happen behind closed doors as a jury deliberates. A full day later, the jury had reached their decision, and Shannon's family was hopeful that they would find her not guilty and they could finally put all of this behind them. But the jury found Shannon Crawley guilty of first-degree murder, and she was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. To this day, Shannon has maintained her innocence. She says that she was there, but she had no part in killing Danita. When asked why she thought Jameer did it, she said she didn't know what caused him to do such a thing, and that she was fully expecting him to kill her to keep her quiet. I will say, in my opinion, Jameer killing Danita seems odd and out of left field. I don't feel like he would have had a motive to kill Danita. If anything, he would have just had a motive to kill Shannon. Jameer wasn't married to Danita. He didn't have any assets with her. He wasn't losing anything if he decided that he wanted to end the relationship and move on. There was just no real rhyme or reason for him wanting to kill her. But of course, crazier things have happened. Jameer has never been charged with anything in connection to Danita's murder. He also claims that he had nothing to do with it, and the DA fully believes that he was not involved in any way. However, the judge did place a lot of blame on Jameer, stating that his behaviors and actions created the perfect storm for murder. Danita is so deeply missed. The North Carolina Central University renamed their newsroom in her honor, renaming it the Danita M. Smith Newsroom. I have no doubts that Danita would have gone on to accomplish all of her dreams and made a huge impact on the lives of those that she knew and those that she would have met. And it's just so tragic to think that Danita had no idea that her fiancé had been unfaithful. She had no idea that a woman that she didn't even know wanted her dead. She was so innocent in all of this, and she didn't deserve any of it. I am very curious to hear your guys' thoughts on this. Do you think Jameer is guilty in any kind of way other than being a cheater? Do you think that he was involved? Or do you think that Shannon thought if she eliminated Danita, that she would get to live happily ever after with Jameer? A lot of people speculate his involvement, and Shannon does have a lot of supporters who believe her story, including her parents and brother, who have been her ultimate ride or die and stand behind her. But for me, it was the waiting to tell this second story that made it not believable to me. If she had told that story initially, I think it would have been much more plausible instead of months later. Make sure that you guys are a part of my private Facebook group by searching Crime with Holly Podcast Discussion Group. In there, I share all information and pictures pertaining to the cases that I cover, and I also encourage all members to share all things true crime. So if you're in there, make sure you let me know your thoughts on this case. I am also on Instagram if you'd like to follow me there. I share true crime stuff as well as regular life stuff. So if you want to see what I'm doing on the day-to-day, you can follow me at Crimeaholly. And lastly, if you would like more true crime content, find me on TikTok at crimewithholly.podcast. That is all for this week's episode. Until next time, be aware and take care, my friends. Bye-bye.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.